Session number 4298, Reel 2. Frankensworth, Reel 2.
Stored some fat and some potatoes, and late in the evening he started to produce potato fritters. And in the end we had so many that we couldn't eat anymore, but it was 10 o'clock already and the curfew had started. But I felt it would be sacrilege to leave these potato fritters uneaten, and so I crept out of our house to the next house and knocked at the door. They opened the door and said, "What are you doing? It's curfew." So I said, "Potato fritters," and ran back.
How long did this last with the herring? 3 times a day.
Well, the commandant who was in charge of the camp, to put it mildly, must not have been a very good organizer. And he left, I don't know, after a fortnight or 3 weeks, and a new man came. And he was the absolute opposite. He was not only a first-class organizer, but from the psychological point of view, he was absolutely brilliant. He collected us all and delivered a speech, which I'm sorry one couldn't preserve it on tape. It really was a masterpiece. He said that not only we are behind barbed wire, but he as well. And he felt as unhappy about it as we did. But since we are now together, we want to make the best of it. One thing I can promise you, whenever anybody is released, I shall be at the gate and shake his hands, which in fact he did. I left very early one morning, and there he was. Made a very nice speech, and at the end came the trump card. We had been without letters for 4 weeks. And that, of course, worried many, many people very much, because after all, what was happening in London, what was happening to their family, and so on. And he said, "Well, I know that the censor has been sitting too long on all the letters which you received. And so I just grabbed a few bags and brought them to the camp, and they will be distributed tonight." Well, the atmosphere in the camp changed. It was quite incredible. I know that some men had tears in their eyes. So you can see what a man who, well, knows about other people, what a man like this can do. And the camp was a different place after his arrival in many, many ways. He arranged for competitions, drawing, exhibition of drawings. He started a cafe, sort of Austrian type, because we had many Austrians. In fact, I talked to him once. I said, "Well, as far as I'm concerned, I don't want you to make it too comfortable. I have no wish to feel happy and contented here. I want to get out." In fact, he understood this very well. I got on with every officer I met. I got on with them very well, because they quite clearly understood my attitude. "I understand why I'm here, but you must understand I wish to get out as soon as possible." So on this basis, we could get on very well. I grew a beard as a sort of protest, and they always pulled my leg. Say, "Oh, Frank, take off this beard. You don't want to look like a prisoner." I said, "That is exactly what I want to do. I want to look like a prisoner, like a prisoner. I promise you, when I get out, I take it off, but not before."
If you had wanted to be clean-shaven, were you allowed to have your own razor, or did you have to go to a barber?
I forgot all about it. Yes, we had to return all the razor blades. But you had to put them in a tray while you were passing through a sort of sluice gate. But there were people who were clever enough, after having put their razor blades into the tray, in passing, took the next lot out. So we had enough razor blades. The ingenuity one develops in situations like this is quite amazing. I didn't recognize myself in many respects, the things I did. We went out for walks occasionally, of course, under guards. Something happened, something very pleasant happens. One of the soldiers, there was a man harvesting apples, and he offered a few apples to the soldier, to one of the soldiers who was guarding us. And he simply made a sweeping movement towards the row of detainees, and the peasant understood and just took a sack of apples and handed it over to us. Enemy aliens, but on another outing, this is what I just remembered, I found a railway sleeper. It was very cold, we had no coal, so I thought this makes lovely firewood. So I put this railway sleeper on my shoulder. And when we marched into the camp, it so happened that one of the officers was leaving, and there I was with this thing on my shoulders, which I couldn't possibly hide. So I fixed him firmly with my eyes, and when he were just about level with me, he turned his head. He looked to the other side promptly, and so I marched past him with the railway sleeper. Again, I mean, this is the sort of atmosphere which makes life rather enjoyable. I tried to cut this thing up, but couldn't. Hard oak. Oh, yes, we had a fire station, and from this fire station, somebody produced, how he managed, I don't know, an axe. I tried, I couldn't, but in our house, we had a miner from the Alsace who was put on a boat in Dunkirk and came to England, of course, as an internee. He was completely lost. He couldn't speak English. He was departed from his family. He was really in a mess. When he saw me trying to do this, he took the axe from me and cut this thing up so beautifully. And that possibly was the first happy moment he had for quite a while, doing a job he knew and doing it wonderfully well. In fact, to me, living in the camp was a very valuable experience. I know many people were miserable and had good reason to be miserable. I had worries, of course, my wife and things like that, but I managed to, I wouldn't say see the bright side. There is no bright side to it, but to learn something new about myself, how one can live under different conditions, how one can adapt. I hadn't drawn, I mean, drawings for many years. I used to draw quite a lot, but I just didn't have the time. Now here, I had the time. First, my hands were very, very stiff, and my first drawings were ridiculously bad, but eventually I improved quite a lot, and though we had a lot of painters who made an exhibition, they asked me to exhibit my drawings, so they must have been quite good. A few I still got. Some unfortunately got lost, because when I came out of the camp, a friend of mine sent them to America to appear in the... what's the name of the paper again? Time and Life. But the ship sunk, and right, they are on the bottom of the sea.
Now, you said that you had no heat, you had no coal, so that's why you got this sleeper. Wasn't it summer?
Well, I'm very, very mixed up about this. It was very cold, undoubtedly. I know I also went and pinched coal, so it must have been very cold. Perhaps it was a summer like this year. You are quite right. It must have been a cold summer. And possibly these houses, which hadn't been lived in, were still moist. It really was pretty cold. We had blankets, but not too many, so during the night one really felt it.
We had straw beds and
not beds. Not beds, just paillasses, I think they are called. Well, later on, again, this new commandant, men over 60 were entitled to beds. That was also part of the improvement.
Well, you were too young for a bed then.
I was too young for a bed, though I was offered a bed, which I refused. I was in charge of the soap for our house, and these were huge bars of soap, and being slightly bored, I started to carve a human figure out of the soap, and unfortunately, the sergeant came in for house inspection, and there I was with the piece of soap which I had rather misused, and he was so impressed by it that I said, all right, you can have it. Oh, he was so pleased. And half an hour later, two chaps arrived with a bed for me, which I proudly said back. I said, I'm not over 60. I don't want any special treatment. Again, this attitude, don't make me feel at home.
Was there no furniture whatsoever?
None.
So, did you eat on the floor? Draw your pictures on the floor?
I drew, how do you, switch it off for a moment. I drew a huge fresco onto one of the very empty white walls using tea. So that was quite fun and kept me busy for a while. Somebody else produced sort of ornaments from the top of tins, which, if you hammered them about, you could make quite nice designs. So a lot of this sort of thing went on to the camp. But more important, we had many scientists and professors and God knows what. And we had over 100 lectures during the week on any subject you can imagine. And also quite a good library in the end. So if one wanted to be, well, I wouldn't call it even entertained. If I wanted to do something with one's empty time, there was quite a bit of possibilities to do something about it. Of course, many elderly men just sat and played cards and were unhappy from morning to night. It's unavoidable. In fact, I feel slightly embarrassed talking so positively about my stay in the camp, because I know a lot of misery was there, undoubtedly. I mustn't forget this. And many people felt wronged. Why should they be treated like this while they have been living in this country for quite a while, or were so obviously utterly harmless and... There was a sort of resentment, undoubtedly.
Did you have lights, electricity?
I believe so. I believe, yes. Lights out at 10 o'clock, if I remember rightly. Yes, we must have had. We had huge tents for our meals and for meetings. In the beginning, we had some sort of metal drums for cooking, with a bit of a chimney stuck to it, and the food was accordingly. But when the new commander came, he arranged that we get the food from the next army camp. And that wasn't too bad.
Until you got your food from the army, who did the cooking?
Well, the inmates did the cooking. I don't know is what gifts or previous knowledge they did. It was pretty awful. So was the material they got. It really was not very good. But again, that changed quite a bit. It wasn't Ritz, but it certainly was bearable, the food. And we didn't have soap or anything in the beginning. Suddenly we could use the army camps. How would you call it? Well, they had some arrangement where you could douche yourself and so on. So at certain times we could go there and have a wash.
What about the more orthodox Jewish internees? Were they able to have their kosher diet?
I don't think so. No, quite impossible. Quite impossible. I suppose some just wouldn't eat meat, of which we had very little anyway. I don't know. I'm sure there must have been a problem, but I don't know about it. I know a friend of mine arranged some sort of religious meeting every Saturday and so on. That was a liberal type of synagogue, if you like to call it. I don't think there were many Orthodox Jews coming from Germany. There are still quite a lot Eastern Jews in England who are Orthodox, but German Jews, very, very few, if any.
The government may have made some sort of effort to segregate people. I know that in the Isle of Man there were a fairly large number of Orthodox Jews in one of the camps. Mm. Perhaps they were able to mostly keep them together so that they could have proper dietary facilities.
Well, this was later. The whole thing was not organized. It was just overnight they suddenly said, we must do this, and they did it somehow. And then slowly things improved and the thing became organized and a little bit more thought out. And in the end, I suppose, those who remained in the camp were rightly interned. I don't think that anybody who didn't belong into the camp was kept for too long, except those who went to Australia, possibly. They came back very, very late.
Did you wear your own clothes, or did you have a uniform?
No, we wore our own clothes.
You were only there for a short time, so the problem might not have arisen. But what happens if you're wearing your own clothes and you've got perhaps just one change of clothes?
Oh, well,
what do you do about washing and mending?
Well, we helped each other. I know somebody arrived without socks, so we had a sort of collection so that he should get some socks or a toothbrush or anything like this. To a certain degree, one could overcome these problems.
Did the Home Office provide anything?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of.
Of course, you weren't there in the winter, so you wouldn't know if they were able to provide cardigans or whatever.
No idea. That is outside my period of experience.
What was your day like?
Well, breakfast. Oh, my personal day.
Did they get you up at a certain time? in military fashion?
Well, no, no, no. You had to get up to get breakfast. So breakfast was at a certain time in the big tent. So if you wanted the breakfast, you went. And if you didn't want the breakfast, and I didn't want it after a very short time, you simply didn't go. No, it wasn't a military organization at all. It was a sort of do as you please.
Was there any structure to the day at all?
Only those who wanted it. A friend of mine he died quite recently, and his daughter read out a letter to me only yesterday, which he sent from Haydn to his family. And he had his day mapped out. First, early in the morning, he did his exercises, then he went for breakfast, then he had chess lessons, then he went to a lecture on history, I believe. His whole day was mapped out, and in his letter he writes, well, I must close now because I have now to go to, and there is the next one. He was a very energetic, very organized man. In fact, a man I admired very, very much indeed. He had been arrested in Dresden, where he lived, was sent to Buchenwald, and the first thing he did is he arranged prayer meetings for the Jewish community, just in order to give them a feeling of not being isolated and completely left on their own. A man with wonderful energy.
How did he get out from Buchenwald back to England?
I must have known, but I have forgotten. Well, in the early days of the Nazi regime, if you knew the right people, or if the right people knew about you, they could manage to get you out and also help you to get out to this country. I believe some family here vouchsafed for him, and so he started from nothing and again established quite a good business. He was a specialist in precious metals. Strangely enough, like most refugees from Germany, they managed. Again, you had a chance to live in this country, in the truest sense of the word. I don't know whether the same would have happened in any other country.
His day was all filled up with lectures, yeah, and things like that. What about yours? You said you were house father.
Yeah.
What did that mean?
Well, I had to organize things to arrange that the house is cleaned, that if we needed more blankets, I would try and get them. I had a pile of soap which I had to cut up and issue every weekend and so on. I don't know. There wasn't very much to do. I only know that when my turn came to clean the house, the broom had disappeared. But when I came back, the house was cleaned. It was the miner who had taken the broom away. So I asked him, "This is none of your business. You mustn't do these sort of things." He felt he had seen my drawings and so on, and all this was very wonderful for him. So he felt, oh, he mustn't clean the room. I do this. These are all these strange human experiences which one makes. I know he was almost frightened of me. He felt he can do too much. And he speaks the language, too, and he can talk to the officers, and they smile at him. It was all very, very mysterious. I really felt terribly sorry for him. He was the lostest sheep, if I could say this, I ever met in my life.
He presumably was stuck there for the duration of the war.
I don't know what has... I often thought of him, what has happened to him. Will he ever find his family again? What has happened to the family in France? They were... Elsass is this apple of contention between Germany and France in any case. And those who were pro-Germans possibly got into difficulties. But those who fled to France were also suspect as perhaps enemy aliens. And that is most likely why he had to go to Dunkirk to flee, I don't know, before the Germans or the French. And there he was pushed on a boat and came to this country where they couldn't speak neither French nor German. Now think of it. And everything so strange. Oh, that was pitiful. So...
How did you come to be house father?
They selected me, and quite honestly, I don't know...
Do you mean you were selected by the officers or elected by the men?
I would assume by the men. I don't remember. It wasn't a moment of glory for me, believe me. Possibly my English was best. That may have been the reason.
I think house father is an interesting word, rather than house captain, house leader, house master.
Yeah, how it came about, I don't know. You are quite right. It makes me, if I think about it, I almost want to grow a beard to look like a house father.
Yes.
It's a pleasant word.
So.
Where does it come from? Don't you have it in school?
I don't know. Possibly.
Hmm. Yes, it's quite a warm word. Not very military at all.
That may be why it was chosen.
Ah, these things are interesting, how they come about.
I mean, there might have been a conscious decision to avoid a sort of Germanic military kind of title on some people's part. You said that, that you were very bossy. Maybe that's why you were
chosen. I wasn't, but I suddenly realized that I had to guard myself. I never regarded myself as bossy. But it is strange. If the temptation arrives, how easily one becomes bossy. I don't think it happened very noticeably. But when I noticed it, I really felt ashamed and stopped it immediately. But again, I never would have expected it from me. But how much does one know oneself? One knows oneself, how one behaves in circumstances which are familiar, but new circumstances. Something entirely different comes out. Something positive, some ability to help yourself, some ability even to help others, but... new situations, and you find yourself partly a different man. That is again a reason why I enjoyed